Welcome to the Mendocino Country Independent News Hour. We're a weekly hour-long news program broadcast live here on KMEC 105.1 FM in Ukiah. And we're also on KYBU 96.9 FM in Covelo. I'm Christina Onnestad, co-publisher of the Mendocino Country Independent. This week, we're going to be joined in the studio by Julia Carrera. She's Mendocino County's former 9.31 independent inspector. For the former 99 medical marijuana plant initiative, which ended last month due to federal threats. We're going to have the scoop on what she's up to these days and what's going on with the county's 9.31 program. We'll also hear an in-depth interview with Joe Elford. He's an attorney with Americans for Safe Access, a medical marijuana advocacy group that's suing the federal government to stop its crackdown on medical marijuana. They've asked Mendocino County to join in on their lawsuit, and we'll hear from an interview with Leti Gressa, activist and beat poet, who will be performing this Friday in Ukiah at the Saturday Afternoon Clubhouse to benefit our fund for local investigative journalism. We're going to take a couple seconds of a musical break with some Balkan beatbox, which I recently saw at the Fillmore in San Francisco, and we'll be back with some local headlines. I'm Christina Onnestad, host of the Mendocino Country Independent News Hour, which you're listening to right now. Thanks for tuning in. Here's some local headlines for you. Irish activists claimed Rattlesnake Island as the new Ireland this past weekend on St. Patrick's Day.
Hear ye, hear ye! Let it be known on this day, March 17, 2012, in the year of no Lord, this island is claimed in the name of the Irish people. Any and all claims and titles to this island or properties found wherein are now and forever the property of the free Irish people.
Rattlesnake Island is a sacred land to the local indigenous LM Pomo people, but the Lake County supervisors are allowing development of a private home there by millionaire John Nady. He's a Bay Area electronics mogul. According to organizer Jeff Ott, the Irish takeover was a parody to bring light to the inherent, quote, white supremacy in the government's decision to support development on land that is still claimed by the nation's first people. That would be the Ilem Pomo.
Any free Irish men and women who have abstained from drinking spirits and who have abstained from white supremacy for a period of no less than 17 years are immediately eligible to claim citizenship of the nation of New Ireland. any non-Irish people who have either paid poll tax on the island or whose great-great-great-grandfathers or great-great-great-grandmothers have voted or danced on this island are deemed automatic citizens of New Ireland.
In a written statement by Ott on Facebook, he says, quote, "It turns out the peoples who inhabited this island for over 10,000 years can't take it back," unquote. Ott sent notification of the island, now known as New Ireland, to the United Nations Security Council, declaring the birth of New Ireland. A lawsuit by the Pomo Ilem to stop development on the sacred island is pending in court. As The Independent reported last week, the federal crackdown on medical marijuana continues to hit us at home. Federal authorities are now targeting banks that hold money for local medical marijuana dispensaries. Two dispensaries, including Compassionate Heart in Ukiah, one of the oldest dispensaries here in Mendocino County, have lost their bank accounts. Compassionate Heart owner Mike Johnson said they have moved through three banks that have eventually closed accounts on his dispensary, the last one due to federal threats. He told The Independent it's an attempt by the feds to thwart medical marijuana business. Quote, "The feds want to force you to do something silly, so they'll file money laundering charges against you. The bottom line is you can't pay taxes without a bank account. You can't pay federal or payroll taxes without a bank account. If you don't pay taxes, you'll have problems," unquote. We'll have more on this story coming up in our next month's issue of The Independent. That's released April 1st, the first of every month. And Jug Handle State Reserve along the Mendocino coast will stay open. The reserve was one of several state parks in Mendocino County to face closure due to the state's deficit. As The Independent reported in February, Alden Olmsted, the son of one of the park's founders, helped to secure funds to keep it open. He said, quote, "Keeping Jug Handle open is not just a success, it's a tribute to my father's memory and legacy." Over 40 years ago, his work helped preserve Jug Handle with the promise of its availability to the public for generations to come, unquote. Carolyn Cathy, director of MAPA, the Mendocino Area Parks Association, also spearheaded efforts to keep the park open. MAPA is working on keeping two more coastal state parks open, Russian Gulch and Standish Hickey. You can visit their website for more information, mendoparks.org. And the federal crackdown on medical marijuana continues throughout the country. Federal authorities aren't just going after local lawmakers in Mendocino County. They're going after state officials in Delaware, Rhode Island, and other places. We're going to hear a story I filed last week for Free Speech Radio News. And then we're going to touch on the subject locally with Julia Carrera, who's in the studios waiting patiently. Thank you, Julia.
Of course.
Rolling Stone magazine, I say no to, Christina, but you, I always say yes.
Oh, thank you, Julia. And we're also going to be airing an interview I did with Joe Elford. He's the attorney for Americans for Safe Access, which is filing a lawsuit against the federal government for its crackdown on the medical marijuana industry here in California and beyond. And you'll hear a little bit about that in this story we're going to air right here from Free Speech Radio News. California was the first state in the nation to legalize the use of marijuana for medicinal purposes in 1996. Since that time, at least 15 other states, including Colorado, Arizona, and Maine, have followed suit, enacting their own laws legalizing medical marijuana. Now, the federal government is pushing back.
In our view, these licensing schemes are inconsistent with federal law.
Melinda Haig is the U.S. Attorney for Northern California. Speaking at a joint press conference of all the U.S. attorneys in the state late last year, Haig vowed a fierce crackdown on medical marijuana.
The law has been hijacked by profiteers who are motivated not by compassion, but by money.
Since that time, the federal government has raided several dispensaries in California, which provide medical marijuana to registered patients. And they've threatened to seize property where marijuana businesses operate and to go after advertisers of medical marijuana products and services. Their latest target? Local lawmakers from Mendocino County, California. Dan Hamburg is a Mendocino County supervisor and former Congress member.
They were threatening to file an injunction against our ordinance, and, you know, try to throw it out in court, and also threatening to individually go after public officials who were supporting these laws, which they believe to be in violation of federal law.
The first county in the state to regulate the production of medical marijuana, Mendocino's 9.31 ordinance allowed growers to cultivate up to 99 plants per parcel. Granted, they submit to inspections by the local sheriffs and meet a stringent list of requirements from erosion control to fencing height standards. John McCowan, a Mendocino County supervisor, helped craft the local law.
It made it very clear to the sheriff that these are the people that are complying with our regulations. They've been inspected. We know they're not illegally diverting water and creating other environmental problems or community problems.
The regulation brought two warring factions in this rural community together for the first time. Local law enforcement and rogue marijuana growers united to create a program that brought an outlaw culture more into the mainstream. Again, McCowan.
I think it is a model of what a regulated, legalized, above-ground marijuana economy could look like, and I think in part that's very threatening to the federal government.
The program also had fiscal benefits. Approved growers paid a $1,500 fee and $50 per plant for specially marked zip ties supplied by the sheriff's office. Mendocino County Sheriff Tom Allman.
Over $600,000 came in. And not reluctantly, might I add.
According to policymakers like Supervisor McCowan, regulating the production of marijuana also saved the county money by reducing the amount of people who would be prosecuted, arrested, and tried in court. But afraid the county would lose its federal funding, the supervisors ended the program last month. Several participating growers wanted the county to fight the feds, including Eric, who only provided a first name when speaking before the Board of Supervisors.
If we could take some of the money and put it towards a legal defense fund, I would be totally behind that. And I would say, fight this thing to the Supreme Court if we have to.
It takes 2 years to get a case into the U.S. Supreme Court. Let's get a case.
Sheriff Tom Allman says it's a state's rights issue that needs the Supreme Court's attention.
Until we get to the point of knowing what's legal and what's not legal, we, as government, will continue to spend a huge amount of resources of eradicating marijuana from people who, very possibly, were legally justified in possessing that marijuana.
Americans for Safe Access, a marijuana advocacy organization, has filed a 10th Amendment lawsuit against the federal government's blowback on medical marijuana, and they're asking Mendocino County officials to join the suit. Attorney Joe Alford.
If the state doesn't want to make medical marijuana illegal, the federal government can't force state officials to enforce laws against medical marijuana.
But that's not stopping the feds from enforcing their own laws. The Department of Justice has also sent letters to other states threatening their medical marijuana laws, like Arizona, Colorado, and Rhode Island. Last month, they sent a letter to Delaware warning against instituting its proposed medical marijuana law. Mendocino County officials have not decided whether to join the federal suit, and despite federal threats, local pot advocates are considering putting the county's 9.31 ordinance before voters this year. Christina Onnestad, FSRN, Mendocino County, California.
I'm Christina Onnestad, publisher of the Mendocino Country Independent, a monthly muckraking publication of local news, arts, and culture here in Mendocino County and beyond. I'm joined in the studios with Julia Carrera. She's the third-party medical marijuana inspector here. Thank you, Julia, for joining us.
Sure, Christina.
So, as the story we just heard stated, 9.31 is the exemption program of 9.31 was ended. The supervisors ended that last month, and they changed the amount of medical marijuana that could be grown from 99 plants per parcel down to 25. How does that relate to what you're doing these days?
Sure. Well, when the Board of Supervisors removed the exemption section of 9.31, they removed the sheriff-certified third-party inspectors. So the sheriff and the county no longer have those inspectors. However, because I was doing it for 2 years and because I had the overwhelming majority of the permit holders, I sit in a position.
You had like 90% of the permit holders, apparently. 80%.
More than 90.
Okay.
Now, that was a, thank you, everyone, by the way. That was a total shock to me and unexpected, and I am very grateful, very, very grateful. But what that's left me with is in a position of being an expert witness. And so what I'm doing today is...
What does that mean, expert witness?
Sure. So if someone were to sit in a position where either a local police agency or a federal police agency came in and said that they were doing something illegal with regard to medical marijuana and it ended up in court, then I would come in as an expert witness if in fact it was legal, saying that I had inspected it. And in fact, it was legal.
You had inspected it based on the 9.31 regulations that the county still has.
Correct.
Okay.
So what people may not know is when the exemption program was in existence and the sheriff's department put up the third-party inspector profiles and pictures, I started getting calls immediately from 25 plant farmers who had either been raided or threatened to be raided by local deputies who didn't quite understand the regulations. And I went in and did these inspections and wrote reports to the lieutenant of the sheriff's department saying, yes, in fact, they were within the regulation. And those people were saved from any kind of further harassment from the deputies from the sheriff's department. I'm offering that service still. So
it's just not applied to 99 plant grows.
Well, I'm not offering it as a sheriff certified third party inspector, although I guess one would have to ask Janine Nadell if I still was, since I was for 2 years. I don't know how I would get uncertified, but I really don't, I haven't asked that question, and I don't really think it's necessary. I mean, experience is experience. So yeah, I'll come in with the current regulations and say, yes, in fact, you are adhering to them. And I would give my clients two copies of that inspection form. I'm using what form would be used if we were doing the program this year through the Sheriff's Department, because the Sheriff's Department had been looking at doing a program for 25 plants. And I put a lot of energy into creating the inspection form. In fact, I did most of the work.
So it's not a program, but you are
not
still
through
you,
the sheriff's
not through the sheriff's department,
but
or
I,
the county
or
at
the
all.
County.
It's more of a voluntary program,
right? Right. What it is, in my opinion, is a way to protect yourself from the potential problems that arise from people in uniform statewide that no matter what think marijuana is evil and an entry-level drug and you're a cartel member and blah, blah, blah. And with an inspection form from me, if they should show up, that can be shown. Whether they want to respect it or not will probably be up to the individual deputy. But if it should have to go to court, then in court, it would be utilized as an expert witness, just like a medical doctor would be used in an insurance claim as an expert witness or an insurance, property insurance claim or something like that. They're, you know, expert witnesses are people that go to court and the court respects their opinion based on their experience.
And that would be used in the defense of people who want to grow medical marijuana in Mendocino County.
Right.
Okay. And it's right now the law is for 25 plants. Would you inspect for more than 25 plants or 25 plants is a limit? Or do you have standards in those regards?
Well, first of all, let me continue on the 25 plant situation. I'm also inspecting for growing standards. The 9.31 farmers, Tony, while he was still our agricultural commissioner before he moved over to Sonoma County, and a representative from Renegade, our little local organic certifying agency, all gathered together for a year and a half and created these draft growing standards, which were submitted to the Board of Supervisors on the day that they changed the, or took the vote for the change to the 9.31 exemption. I'll be inspecting for those growing standards also. I'm in discussions right now with the Sheriff's Department about how the board possibly could move forward with that situation and approve a growing standard. And we'll see what comes of that. But no matter
what. So can you tell us more about growing standards when you refer to growing standards? Is this organic? Is this best practices? And tell us a little bit about what they are.
Sure. Well, first of all, we can't use that O word because you can be fined up to $50,000 per use by the federal government because they now own the word organic.
Unless you are certified by an organic standards.
Right, by the USDA.
Or a company that is...
No, only the USDA. The federal government owns the word organic. No one can utter it without being fined. What I mean by utter is, if they say this is organic, they will be fined if they haven't been certified by a USDA certification agency.
By a certification agency. So if you are... So that's one way a grower could be certified organic.
Well, there's no one except for Chris Van Hook with Clean Green that is doing that.
He's certifying organic. And he used to be an inspector as well.
Yes. And then what these standards are is... I wish I had brought something with me so that I could read it to everyone, but what they are is a very fair and simple way to guarantee that in our environment, the earth that we are on, the environment, the air that we live in, as well as the medicine itself, is safe for consumption and safe for farming. And it's a self-monitoring program that I would come and review, similar to how Renegade has set up their certification program. And there are four levels that you can adhere to. The fourth one being equal to biodynamic type farming. The third one equal to organic type farming. And the two lower ones are transitional levels so that you can bring yourself more into a what I call higher consciousness farming practice of your medicine. All four, though, require testing so that the medicine is clean. You don't want to be giving medicine to people that are ill that is tainted with anything. And so that will be reviewed also. And what I'm also doing, Christina, is recommending to everyone, and I'm sending out some information to our local physicians that write recommendations for medical marijuana, that both the farmers that can operate with 25 plants per script, per prescription by the medical doctor, that they request and or demand that their medical doctor include on their recommendation how many flowering buds they should consume per day, week, month, whatever the physician's timeline is for that recommendation, so that no matter what, it's clear how much marijuana is allowed according to the physician. Now, again, if you end up in court for some reason, that would require the doctor to come in and somehow validify his recommendations. So that's something else I'm working on right now to help the farmer protect himself and help the doctors protect themselves. Because as we all know, when we go to an MD for pharmaceutical medication, it tells you how many pills per whatever, you day, hour, whatever, that you need. So it's just following the traditional precedent-setting prescription format.
So what is your sense from your clients? How many people have you talked to that are, since this is no longer necessarily a county-sanctioned program, or the exemption program is no longer county-sanctioned by the sheriff's office or the Board of Supervisors, how many people are actually interested in participating? What's your sense in the community here?
Uh-huh. Well, I have people calling me that weren't in the program that are interested in doing this. In fact, before I sat down with you, I had an hour-long discussion with someone that's going to do this that was not in the program, in the exemption program. And the my clients, all of them, I sent out an email, and all of them, except for maybe three, have responded, that's an estimate, have responded that they would like me to do inspections. So Seems to be something that they asked me to do, by the way. This isn't something that I had planned on doing, but the farmers asked if I would do inspections on their farms during this year-long hiatus, as Tom Allman calls it. And I think he might be accurate. I think that something, you know, as fundamental as a patient's access to their medicine for people that cannot grow it for one reason or another is something that no matter what will stand up anywhere in court. So I think we're going to see down the road some morph of something. I like to say while the program's on hiatus, I'm going to do my best to keep the program intact based on current regulations. So my fees are what the sheriff would charge if they were doing it. And the hope for the farmers and for myself is that we continue the program with the current regulations so that the county can take it back over next year.
Okay, so current regulations, they included some erosion control measures, fencing height standards. I want to go into the fees before we wrap it up. It's 5:27, we're almost at the bottom of the hour. The fees, $1,500 fee to sign up?
No, nothing like that.
Okay,
no.
The sheriff's office, just so for our listeners, the sheriff's office, it was $1,500 fee to register and then $50 a zip tie.
Right.
What kind of fees are you referring to?
Yeah, that no longer exists. I am recommending that everybody get zip ties at $25 a piece.
Who issues the zip ties?
The sheriff's department.
They still issue the zip ties?
Yes, they do. And I highly recommend that everybody get them. And so those fees are involved that go to the sheriff's department. Then the fee to me and goes directly to me, which then gets funneled into the community, which is why I don't have any money right now, because that's what happened last year. The fees are what the sheriff would charge on an inspection, and it's geographically designated on my website, juliacarrera.com, but it's 323 closest into Ukiah, I think it's 32 or something like that. Further out, and then the farthest away are 5, maybe 32.
So between $300 and $500.
Basically.
And if people want to contact you or they want more info, they can go to your website.
At juliacarrera.com. That's JuliaCarrera.com. Or give a call to the office, 707-489-0996.
All right, Julia, thanks so much for joining us here on the Mendocino Country Independent News Hour. Any last comments as we wrap it up here?
Yeah, I think it's really important for our community to remain united around this medical marijuana issue. Division is how the federal government will conquer. If we stay united, we will conquer. Thanks, Christina.
All right, thank you, Julia. That was Julia Carrera. She is the third-party medical marijuana inspector here in Mendocino County, discussing the different ways people can continue to have an inspector and have an expert witness in these turbulently changing times around medical marijuana here in Mendocino County. And we are going to take a short musical break, and then we'll be back with Joe Elford, La Tigresa, and some community announcements. You are tuned to the Mendocino Country Independent News Hour, broadcast here on KMEC 105.1 FM in Ukiah, and also on KYBU in Covelo 96.9 FM.
Come on.
I want to let you know that the Mendocino Environmental Center is holding its annual membership drive. Their goal of 500 members will ensure that they can operate the center and KMEC radio for the next year. To become a member or to renew your membership, call 707-468-1660 or stop by the MEC at 106 West Stanley Street in Ukiah. Memberships can also be mailed to P.O. Box 299, Ukiah, California, 95482. Support peace, justice, and the environment by becoming a MEC member. I want to let you know that the Mendocino Environmental Center, which holds a license to KMEC Community Radio, turns 20 years this year, and they're holding their annual Board of Directors election. Three seats are open on the nine-member board. The term is 2 years, and you must be a MEC member to run. Ballots will be mailed out Thursday, April 5th, and they'll be counted at the annual membership meeting on Earth Day, Sunday, April 22nd, at the Mendocino Environmental Center, 106 West Stanley Street in Ukiah. All ballots must be in at 3 o'clock that day. And the Mendocino Country Independent presents Here She Comes Again. Two one-woman shows, one night only, at the Saturday Afternoon Clubhouse in Ukiah this Friday, March 23rd, from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m., featuring the artist performance art of Sherry Glazer Love and spoken word poetry from La Tigresa. Proceeds benefit the Mendocino Country Independent Fund for Investigative Journalism. Give us a call at 468-1660 for more information. And this is the Mendocino Country Independent News Hour here on KMEC. We're broadcast every week on the MEC and on KYBU, 96.9 FM in Covelo. I'm Christina Onnestad, co-publisher of the Mendocino Country Independent, a monthly publication of news, arts, and culture here in Mendocino County and beyond. Right now, we're going to hear an interview I did with Joe Elford. We're going to continue along on the medical marijuana conversation. I spoke with him. Joe Elford is the staff attorney for the ASA, Americans for Safe Access. And they have filed a federal lawsuit against the Justice Department for its crackdown on medical marijuana. They're alleging the actions are violating the 10th Amendment.
That even though the federal government has the authority under the Commerce Clause to regulate all of this activity, there's no question at this point, based on a Supreme Court decision that came out a few years ago, that the federal government has the authority to regulate medical marijuana. There are limitations on that authority, and the 10th Amendment provides one limitation, which is that the 10th Amendment prohibits the federal government from conscripting or commandeering state law enforcement to enforce its laws against medical marijuana. So, for instance, if the state doesn't want to make medical marijuana illegal, the federal government can't force state officials to enforce laws against medical marijuana. And so our case is a very targeted case based on that theory. In particular, in Mendocino County, there is a zip tie program, or there was a zip tie program. So in Mendocino County, the sheriff's department did not want to enforce laws against marijuana where someone was cultivating for medical purposes to ensure that the sheriff's department was not enforcing those laws. They actually gave zip ties out to cultivators. So if you're cultivating medical marijuana, you would prove that to the sheriff's department. The sheriff's department would then issue you a zip tie. You would have a zip tie affixed around a marijuana plant. And then if the sheriff's department came by and saw a marijuana plant with a zip tie affixed to it, the sheriff's department would leave you alone because the sheriff's department would know that that's medical marijuana, not an activity it wished to enforce. But based on threats from the federal government, Mendocino County Board of Supervisors rescinded the zip tie program. So it effectively forces the Mendo sheriffs to have no way of knowing the difference between a marijuana plant that it considers legitimate and a marijuana plant that it does not consider legitimate. In other words, it forces them to enforce marijuana laws against all marijuana cultivators, even though that's not something the county wants to do. And that violates the 10th Amendment.
isn't there precedence that has already been set stating that federal law trumps state law?
Yes, there is, and that's the Supreme Court decision I was referring to. It's called Gonzalez versus Raich, and it does establish that the federal government has the authority to enforce laws against marijuana for all purposes and can do so even in states that allow medical marijuana. So it's very clear that the feds can come into the state of California and enforce its laws against medical marijuana. And that law would trump state law where there is a conflict. But having said that, where there is no conflict, the 10th Amendment prevents the federal government from conscripting state officials or commanding state officials to enforce federal law. So even though the feds can do what they want to do, they can't force local officials to do what they don't want to do.
So that's what your suit is based on.
Yes, our suit is not seeking to relitigate the Raich case. We concede that the federal government can enforce its laws against marijuana for all purposes. Our lawsuit is a much more narrow lawsuit that says even though the feds can enforce their laws, they can't force local officials to enforce their laws. And that's what the 10th Amendment says. The 10th Amendment says that the federal government cannot conscript local officials to enforce laws that local officials don't want to enforce. And to give you, I think, the best examples in Mendocino County, they are effectively forcing the Mendocino County Sheriff's Department to enforce laws against medical marijuana where the Sheriff's Department doesn't wish to do that.
So what is the end result goal of your suit? What exactly are you seeking? Are you seeking the federal government to – well, I'll let you answer that.
Okay. I mean, obviously, it's not about money. We're seeking injunctive relief. So we're seeking an injunction from the federal court that would tell the federal government that they can't force localities to implement laws against medical marijuana where those localities do not wish to implement laws against medical marijuana. If the feds want to waste their resources going after medical marijuana patients, I think that's demonstrated that they're entitled to do that. But they can't force localities to waste resources going after medical marijuana patients. That's what the 10th Amendment prohibits.
So in other words, what you're seeking is you're seeking the federal government to tell the feds to back off of clamping down on counties and sending letters saying what you're doing violates federal law. You could be subject to RICO Act violations.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, we are asking the federal courts to step in based on the 10th Amendment, based on our constitutional system of a federalist system of government, to tell the federal government that they cannot coerce localities to implement laws that localities do not wish to implement. And that's exactly what our federalist system is all about. If locality doesn't want to waste their money going after medical marijuana patients, the feds can't force them to waste their money doing that.
So in essence, if Mendocino County wanted to reinstate its 99 plant law, it could?
Absolutely. And that's it's exactly what our federalist system of government envisions, is that localities can decide what's best for the health of its citizens and also simply how to expend their resources. And if Mendocino County doesn't want to make criminals out of medical marijuana patients, it doesn't want to waste its resources sending medical marijuana patients to jail, then Mendocino County should be allowed the mechanisms that would allow them to do that, including the 99 plant rule, and including zip tie.
How would ASA describe what the feds are doing?
It's still a little too early to tell. I mean, because what's happened is the feds have sent out letters to over 100 landlords, but they really haven't yet followed up. And I don't know how they're going to follow up. So I'm concerned it's going to be a lot worse than what we're seeing now. It's already bad. I mean, you had the four U.S. attorneys of the state of California holding a joint press conference to denounce medical marijuana. You don't even get the four U.S. attorneys in the state of California to hold a joint press conference to denounce terrorism or any other thing like gun running or anything like that. I mean, so it is unprecedented to have the four U.S. attorneys holding a joint press conference over anything, and the fact that they would do it over medical marijuana is obviously extremely disconcerting to us. The federal policy is wrong. It will be changed. It'll be a matter of time, but it will be changed. This president has said that it's not a wise use of resources for the federal government to go after medical marijuana patients. And it's unfortunate that these four U.S. attorneys have taken it on themselves to go after medical marijuana patients and providers. And they've done so based on what I consider, and I've been doing this for over 8 years, based on what I consider, and you're going to see increasingly in the California courts, a misinterpretation of California law. I mean, these four U.S. attorneys like to say that commercial activity dealing with medical marijuana is prohibited even under California law, so they're allowed to go after them. But there's no reason why these U.S. attorneys should be interpreting California law. They should leave that to California courts. And just this 2 weeks ago, in a case called People versus Colvin, a unanimous court of appeal affirmed that commercial medical marijuana activities are legal under California law. So you've got U.S. attorneys saying if it's commercial, it's illegal under California law, and you've got the California courts who disagree.
When you talked about the letters that the feds have sent out, let's presume someone's just tuning in and they've, what does that mean, letters feds have sent out?
The federal government has been antagonistic to California's medical marijuana laws ever since 1996, and they've used different tactics to try to thwart California's medical marijuana laws. And in this kind of new series of threats, the federal government sent out over 100 letters to landlords. So if you're a landlord and you have a dispensary in your building, they sent out letters threatening both forfeiture of your property, and this is no small amount of money because, you know, in California, a commercial property easily can be worth millions of dollars, and they also threaten them with criminal prosecution that carries sentences of up to 25 years. So they have not yet followed through on these threats, but that remains to be seen.
What other kinds of my understanding is that the feds have also threatened advertisers, they've threatened banks, and they're also going after dispensaries as well. Could you tell us more about how they've amped up their recent wave of cracking down on the medical marijuana in California?
At that initial press conference in October, the four U.S. attorneys made some very strong threats against medical marijuana patients and providers and their landlords in a number of different ways. You know, they've only put one step forward at this point in terms of their threats to landlords. They've sent the letters. Those letters, my understanding, said you have 45 days to evict, and a number of those landlords didn't evict, and we haven't seen the second step. So it's unclear at this point whether the feds will follow up in those threats. The feds have subpoenaed records from more than five dispensaries in San Francisco, but it's unclear what they plan to do with that information. It's no secret that in San Francisco you have approximately 40 licensed dispensaries. They're not hard to find. I don't know how much information the feds are getting that they don't already have. I think they're trying to scare people. The real question is do they intend to follow up? And I certainly hope they don't. I think it'd be horrible public policy for them to do so. But unfortunately, we don't control them except with my one vote in a country of over 200 million.
Somebody described it as an escalated crackdown. How would you describe what they're doing?
It's unclear. I think they have described it as an escalated crackdown, but I guess it simply remains to be seen. I mean, it was in October that they announced some very serious threats against medical marijuana patients, providers, and landlords who rent the dispensaries, but we haven't yet seen any actual prosecutions that have come from that or any forfeiture actions that I'm aware of. So certainly the threats have escalated, but so far the results have not. And you know, I don't know exactly what's keeping them in line, but so far we haven't seen the actual results coming from their threats.
We have seen a series of raids.
I don't know that the raids have actually increased dramatically in California compared to the raids. There have always been raids in California, unfortunately. And that clearly does seem to be part of the new federal strategy, is to ramp up the number of raids. It's what we kind of refer to as smash and grab. They raid a dispensary, they take all their marijuana, and then they don't follow up with a prosecution. So they get their pound of flesh without actually having to take it to court.
Why would they do that? And then I want to talk more about your lawsuit as we wrap up our conversation.
Based on the press conference that was held in October with the four U.S. attorneys, it's become abundantly clear. I think two things are abundantly clear. One, the federal government wishes to try to eradicate medical marijuana in California and presumably in the other 15 states plus the District of Columbia that has medical marijuana laws. So at least they're announcing that theory. They recognize that they don't have the funds to do it on their own. I mean, if you took every DEA official in the United States and assigned them to California to eradicate California's medical marijuana laws, they would fail. And I think they recognize that. And so what they're trying to do is to scare everybody away from medical marijuana by announcing these threats, by doing things like raiding medical marijuana dispensaries, by scaring landlords. They're doing it simply by fear, because they can't do it simply through force.
Now, your lawsuit. Well, I think we talked about what the ultimate goal of the lawsuit was. What next?
I mean, the next stage, we are actively courting Mendocino County itself to become involved in the lawsuit. That may take some time. We're going to need specific individual plaintiffs, someone who had the zip ties who now can't get the zip ties, or even if they have the zip ties, they're effectively worthless at this point, because the Board of Supervisors of Mendocino rescinded the zip tie program based on threats to themselves from the federal government. I mean, my understanding is the federal government threatened local officials in Mendocino with prosecution if they continued this zip tie program. And so you have this extremely active interference in local governing by the federal government, and that's where they crossed the line. They crossed the 10th Amendment line. Luckily for us, there is a case that deals with standing. It makes it so that an individual can argue the 10th Amendment theory. So this enables us to be able to argue on behalf of individuals. It'd be great if the county joins us. It'd be great if the sheriff joins us. But we're going to go forward in any event.
I've seen tons of letters that the feds have sent the state of Delaware, Hawaii, Arizona. I mean, this is, over the past year, I'd say, they're going after anyone, really. How would you describe?
I mean, it's extremely unfortunate that the federal government is deciding to waste its resources to go after medical marijuana patients and providers. I mean, what has happened is the state of California was a pioneer in this field. Back in 1996, California passed its law regarding medical marijuana. At the time, it had support of 57% of the electorate, and now that support has increased. And it's increased because the experiment has worked, that people actually recognize it is a medicine that can be used by people beneficially without tremendous negative side effects. And what has happened is other states have recognized this as well. So it starts with California and Arizona, and now you have 16 states plus the District of Columbia, and that's because it's worked, and people recognize it works. And, I'm extremely confident that you'll have more states, and eventually the federal government will recognize medical marijuana as a legitimate way of treating people. So it's just extremely unfortunate that you have some number of U.S. attorneys who apparently met, whether it was in a smoke-filled room or over the telephone, and have decided that they're going to conduct a war on medical marijuana in all of the states that have it. And that's extremely unfortunate. Our whole federalist system of government is based on a principle that is referred to in the courts by the laboratory of the states, that the states can experiment with public policy. If it's a good idea, it works. If it's a bad idea, it fails. And it allows a state like California to experiment with medical marijuana. And if it works, that experiment will spread to other states and eventually to the federal government. And if California wanted to experiment with something that didn't work, then oops, California, right, you know, would set a precedent for other states to realize that experiment didn't work. But medical marijuana is pretty clear when you talk public opinion. If you just talk to Californians, it is clear that medical marijuana is an experiment that has worked in California, is going to work elsewhere, and it's just extremely unfortunate that the federal government doesn't see fit to abide by basic constitutional principles and allow the states to experiment and allow the states to prove them wrong.
Some people have likened this to a civil rights issue, women's right to vote. What do you think?
Well, it's actually it's that laboratory of the states principle that was originally espoused around the time of when you were talking about whether women have the right to vote. And the state of Wyoming was the first state to allow women the right to vote. Back then, that was actually a very controversial notion. And, you know, people predicted all kinds of doom and gloom in the state of Wyoming if you allowed women the right to vote. In fact, what happened was women got the right to vote, and it improved democracy in Wyoming. And then other states realized that giving women the right to vote would improve democracy in their states as well. And so women's suffrage eventually caught on and ultimately changed on a federal level as well. So that's one example of exactly what we're talking about here.
Any last comments you'd like to make as we wrap it up?
These laws are working in California. If the feds would leave us alone, these laws would work even better.
Joe Elford, staff attorney for Americans for Safe Access, about their 10th Amendment lawsuit against the federal government for its recent crackdown on medical marijuana. We've got a few minutes left. I want to bring you an interview I did with La Tigresa, a very short one. She's performing this Friday at the Saturday Afternoon Clubhouse, the 23rd, from 7 to 10 p.m., along with Sherry Glazer Love. It's a benefit for the Mendocino Country Independent Fund for Investigative Journalism. In 2000, she made national headlines for blockading a logging truck bare-breasted, reciting poetry of the goddess, and she called on the loggers there to worship Mother Earth. Well, we've got an interview with her. We're going to follow that up with a poem called Purge and Gorge. In the interview, she connected the exploitation of the environment with the exploitation of women.
Because the earth has been taken so for granted that humans have just assumed that they could use and use and use and use without giving back. And that's often the way women are treated. Children will sometimes take advantage of mothers. They're just, well, of course, you know, the mother's there to give and give and give, and she is. Just like the voice speaking in the poem, you know, find a way to receive what I offer you freely. Women want to give, but what's been happening for thousands of years in history is that the male-dominated culture has taken from women in such ways that women have become harmed, and they've taken from the earth in such ways that the earth has been harmed, and it's a complete connection.
So what I find fascinating is that despite knowing how women have been subjugated, there's still this really strong reclamation of the divine feminine in your work. Can you tell us more about that?
Yes, thank you for that word, reclamation. It's all about women being in their power. I was 52 years old, bare-breasted with a flower in my hair, looking damn good, looking fine enough to stop trucks in their tracks. I was in my power. I was in the beginning of menopause, and I did the most powerful thing I've ever done in my life, stopping trucks. They didn't stop because I was saying a poem or carrying a sign. The truck stopped because I was bare-breasted, and that was pure woman's power. My two bare breasts were more powerful than a huge corporation owning billions of dollars, big trucks, big bulldozers, chainsaws, big burly men. They stopped. They were listening because they are in awe of women's power. And that's just a truth that every woman knows and every man knows. And women throughout history have used the power of the beauty of their bodies, the power of their attractiveness to men for good political causes. Lady Godiva was not a fairy tale or a myth. Lady Godiva was a historically known political activist. Her husband was a tax collector. And the citizens of the town were complaining the taxes were too high, and she agreed. And she said, honey, why don't you lower the taxes? And he said, the day you ride naked on a white horse through the downtown square, I'll lower the taxes. So she did, and the taxes got lowered, and the people could live better lives. Women in Africa, women in Canada, women all over the world throughout history have used their power in similar ways to what I did with the bare-breasted boycott. But in general, women are coming back to reclaiming their power now because we have no other choice unless we want to just allow this planet to mutate into some bizarre life forms that can live without oxygen, without water. But if we want life as we know it to continue, we've got to clean up our house, just like your mom saying, clean up your mess. This is the mother in all of us, and there are men also who are awakening, and it's time.
There is a certain rhythm in this world called Purge and Gorge. Yeah, Purge and Gorge. It is a certain wave upon the shore for more and more, then let it go. Yeah, more and more, then let it go. Called Purge and Gorge. Yeah, Purge and Gorge. No, I am not bulimic, and that isn't how I mean it. Purge and Gorge. Yeah, Purge and Gorge. I mean to empty out your mind and body, life and closet, space and brainwave, suitcase, wallet, cupboard, dance card, and your list of expectations. Then, to fill them up to overflowing with the pounding, building, growing climax of intensest peak crescendo. And then to go for even more, beyond and soaring, past the boundaries. Even pain is no obstruction, just a glutton for experience and passion. And then, to mellow out and drift ashore and sleep for one whole day or more and reassemble in some order all the flowers from the garden when the whole bouquet exploded into stars and doves and whirling streaks of light. My lover has this rhythm too, fill to the max, then let it slack, then come right back for more, yeah, fill to the max, then let it slack, then come right back for more, yeah, fill to the max, then let it slack, then come right back for more, yeah, I dig the balance in this pattern, I dig the no-holds-barred surrender to the moment, I dig the no-holds-barred surrender to the moment, I dig the no-holds-barred surrender to the moment.
Thanks for listening to the Mendocino Country Independent News Hour. I'm Christina Onnestad. We'll be back next week. Same time, same place.